So we'll start the afternoon session, and the first speaker is Diego Coria, and he will tell us about the quark-anti-quark potential in N equals 4 super young belts.
Well, thank you very much for the chance of giving this talk here. Well, as indicated in the title, what I'm going to be telling you today is how to use some integrability tools to compute the quark-anti-quark potential in N equals 4 super young belts. So, does it work? This is a, well, there was a series of,
is it on?
I don't know. Sorry. It's fine. A series of articles written in collaboration with Johannes Hen, Juan Maldacena, and Amit Sagar, in which we study the anomalous, the CASP anomalous dimension, essentially, but I will be focusing in the last one in which we attack the problem using integrability. So, well, as I said, I will just start reminding you how you can relate a quark anti-quark potential with the anomalous dimension of a Wilson loop with a CASP. And then the rest of the talk is going to be mainly telling you how you can develop a method using integrability techniques to compute this CASP anomalous dimension. So the method is quite indirect, and it contains these series of steps. The first one is just consider an auxiliary problem, which is deforming the original Wilson loop by inserting at some point along the Wilson loop a chain of fields of N equal 4 super young mills, which will be interpreted as an open chain. So when you consider this insertion as an open chain, the Wilson loop is posing the boundary conditions for this open chain. And I will tell you how to use symmetries or other arguments and crossing symmetry arguments to fix what is the reflection matrix for this open chain. If you introduce a global rotation of one of the boundaries with respect to the other in this open chain, this is equivalent to introducing an angle between the two half lines of the Wilson loop, which is introducing the CASP angles you are interested in. But as I said, this problem is not the original problem. So somehow we would like to take a limit in which the size of this insertion we made in the Wilson loop, in the limit in which this size goes to zero, to recover the original setup of just a Wilson loop with a CASP angle. So in order to do that, we should be able to describe the scale dimensions of this Wilson loop with insertions exactly for all values of this length L. And to do that, we developed the thermodynamic variance, the boundary thermodynamic variance, and eventually, by taking the limit in which L goes to zero, for instance, we just focusing in the energy of the ground state, the anomalous dimension that remains in this limit should be the anomalous dimension of the Wilson loop with the CASP. Well, just to remind all of you, I mean, this is using integrability, so it's valid only in the planar limit of N equal 4 super young mills, but it's going to be valid for any value of the tough coupling. Well, this is the relation I wanted to make between the quark anti-quark potential and the CASP anomalous dimension. So both quantities are computed by means of Wilson loop expectation value. In the case of the quark anti-quark potential, typically you define it through the expectation value of a very elongated rectangular Wilson loop, in which the time length is much larger than the spatial separation. This expectation value gives you the quark anti-quark potential for two quarks separated by a distance r. So, while the CASP anomalous dimension in principle is something else, it's also related to the expectation value of a Wilson loop, but in this case it's related to expectation value of a Wilson loop with this cusp angle, so a sudden turn at some point along the loop. So the introduction of these cusp angles produces some extra logarithmic divergences, and precisely and gives this Wilson loop an anomalous dimension, and precisely the coefficient multiplying these logarithmic divergences is what it is defined the cusp anomalous dimension. Just a comment, I mean, sometimes in the literature, so you see for in my talk when I refer to the cusp anomalous dimension, it depends on an angle phi. Sometimes in the literature, the cusp anomalous dimension is just a function of lambda. That corresponds to taking this phi imaginary and very large. In that limit, is what sometimes it is called the cusp anomalous dimension. In this case, it's just a function of the angle. Well, but in principle, these are two different computations. How are they related? So, well, in N equal 4 super young Mills, this is a conformal field theory, and you can make this plane to cylinder map, or actually R4 to R cross a three sphere map, by the usual relation between the logarithm of the radial distance in a flat space with the time in the cylinder. So if you do that, these two lines forming a cusp are mapped to two parallel lines in the cylinder at different points in the three sphere by an angle separated by an angle pi minus phi. Well, not only you have that, but also if you now rewrite this logarithm, so this is the expectation value of the Wilson loop with the cusp as we define it. So if you rewrite this using this, now in the cylinder, this logarithm of the infrared cutoff minus the logarithm of the UV cutoff gives you precisely the temporal length of this Wilson lines in the cylinder. So it is precisely this. And this is what it is defined as the quark anti-quark potential. So in this case, it is not the quark anti-quark potential in the plane, but it is the potential for two quarks in the three sphere, separated by an angle pi minus phi. So if you were interested in the flat space quark anti-quark potential, you had just to take this, well, delta is defined over there, so delta is precisely pi minus phi. If you take delta going to zero, so this reproduces the quark anti-quark potential in flat space. Well, another thing is we are going to be considering some special kind of Wilson loops, which also, so it's like imagine that these quarks are also coupling to this, or couples to these scalar fields you have in N equal 4 super young Mills. So that's why, because this Wilson loop, which is also coupling to the scalar fields along some direction this is a vector in the internal phi sphere. So these kind of Wilson loops are locally VPS. So if you consider this Wilson loop in a straight line, and this vector n is a constant, this could be exactly half the VPS. Well, now what we are going to be considering these kind of operators, not in a straight line, but in a line with a cusp. So there is no reason for taking this constant to be the same in both half lines. So we perfectly and naturally can define that in this half line, this Wilson loop is coupled with some n, but in the other half line is coupled with some other n prime. So it's like taking a relative angle inside this internal phi sphere, and then we can define like an internal cusp angle by introducing these two different directions. So, well, as I said, I mean, so this is the main motivation for computing this cusp anomalous dimension, which as I said, is gonna be a function of two angles, this geometrical cusp and this internal cusp angle theta. And the idea is to develop this auxiliary problem to compute it using interoperability. So what is the auxiliary problem we study is, as I said earlier, the formation by inserting at some point, let's say at some value of tau, a local operator, which is a product of these action fields of N equal 4 super young Mills. You can interpret this as a chain, very, very much as for it was for the case of single traces. For instance, you can consider different kind of fields as different orientations in a spin chain. So you can map states or in a spin chain with these Wilson loops with different insertions. So and we would like to compute the anomalous dimension of Wilson loops or these insertions in the Wilson loop. So if you were to compute a Wilson loop with two of these insertions, perturbatively, you would need at some point to do some renormalization, as you would expect, which is going to amount, for instance, some mixing between different insertions for different operators where let's say that these different fields are at different positions. So and this you will need to diagonalize this renormalization matrix, which is nothing but like an spin chain Hamiltonian for your different insertions you could put in the Wilson loop. Again, well, for conformal symmetry, the form of this expectation value is fixed to be this of this form. So what you really need to do is to diagonalize this mixing problem. If you do this, for instance, at one loop, it was done by Drucker and Kawamoto a few years ago, in a closed SU2 sector, what you get is an Heisenberg spin chain with open boundaries, which is integrable. So, but what we'd like to know is not just a closed sector or one loop. We would like to know the most general insertion and to all loop order. So, and this problem, in a similar way as for the case of single traces, is argued to be integrable to all loop in perturbation theory. So the strategy is to find, using symmetry arguments, what the reflection matrix is, and for instance, just to make this argument to check at least that boundary Jahn-Baxter condition is satisfied. So, well, let me just briefly remind. So we are going to consider making an insertion of many set fields, which is going to be the vacuum of our spin chain. And in it, we can propagate impurities. All different impurities are the usual magnons in this kind of analysis. The symmetries of the vacuum are the symmetries of the set field, which is two copies of SU2, /2. So impurities, in general, transform in representation, in fundamental representations of these two copies of SU2. So they are going to carry two indices, two fundamental indices, one of the left or one for the right representation. So they're going to have a momentum which labels these fundamental representations. In the case of this bulk symmetry, both fundamental representation have the same quantum numbers. So, but now we would like to consider the reflection of these magnons by the boundary set by the Wilson loop. So the way to fix what the reflection matrix is as it was done for the bulk scattering matrix, use the symmetries of the problem. So the symmetries of the problem are, in this case, the intersection of the symmetries of the vacuum, which is the usual SU2/2² with the symmetries of the Wilson loop, which is this OSP4/4. But the intersection turns out to be just a single diagonal copy of these two SU2 groups. It was done for a similar case in a DeFi brain and for the Wilson loop in these two articles. So, but the important thing is that Now this bulk magnet that carries two indices of these two fundamentals of these two SU2 groups, each of these fundamental indices are going to be a fundamental of this diagonal representation, but with a difference. So let's say the fundamental with respect to the left group, which had quantum number such as can be interpreted as a momentum with as a particle with momentum p, is going to be also a fundamental of the diagonal group with momentum p, but the right fundamental quantum numbers are such that with respect to the diagonal SU2/2, this second index behaves as a fundamental of the diagonal symmetry, but with momentum minus p. So what essentially is doing this. So now when you have a bulk magnon, we have like a pair of magnons, the product of two magnons with momentum p and minus p of this, with respect to this diagonal SU2/2 symmetry. So if you impose that the reflection is going to preserve this SU2/2 symmetry, it's not surprising that what you get for this reflection matrix is the same matricial structure that you get for the bulk scattering matrix for scattering when you constrain the reflection, the scattering matrix using the SU2/2 symmetry. So this is the reflection matrix which is going to characterize the problem by this the open chain with these Wilson loop boundaries. Of course, this argument fixes the reflection matrix up to an overall function which we call sigma v here. So this one, for the moment, we don't know what it is. We included the bulk dressing factor just for convenience. So it is natural to expect that this is going to satisfy Ian Baxter. The way to see quickly is, I mean, Ian Baxter in the case of a boundary Ian Baxter, imposed that, I mean, when you have the reflection of two magnons coming to a boundary, you would like the different ways of factorizing this reflection of two magnons to be the same. So in this case, boundary and Baxter implies imposing this condition, in which the boundary and the bulk scatterings take place at different orders. But if we recall that for each of these lines there were two indices that from respect to the diagonal symmetry can be interpreted as a bulk scattering with particles coming from the other side for each of the reflections, at the end of the day, what you have is like a sequence of different, all these intersections are represent bulk scattering processes. So, and then since the matrix is exactly the same matrix as for the bulk scattering of magnons, which satisfies the bulk Jan-Baxter equation, so bulk Jan-Baxter condition ensures that the boundary Jan-Baxter condition is going to be satisfied. So this boundary reflection matrix, which is up to a factor equal to the bulk scattering matrix for a particle with momentum p and minus p, satisfies Jan-Baxter condition. So, but we still don't know what this overall dressing factor is. We are not going to do something new. I mean, it's the same trick as it was done for instance, for the fixing the bulk dressing factor. So it's imposing, demanding that this this scattering process satisfies the crossing condition. The crossing condition is just a relation between the scattering of particles and antiparticles. This is a nice argument by Weiser, that with this you can build up, like, you can construct singlets of this SU2/2 group carrying no quantum number, so no energy, no momentum, so the scattering with this singlet should be trivial. So this graphically is like disentangling these two lines. And if you fit here the scattering matrices, this is going to impose a condition on the overall dressing factor. So if you do the same for the reflection of a singlet from this boundary, what you will end up having a boundary crossing condition of this sort. You would like this reflection of a singlet to be trivial, and this leads to the following boundary crossing condition for the unknown boundary dressing phase sigma b. So we would like to find a solution satisfying this boundary crossing condition. So it's a lot simpler than what it was, the boundary crossing, the bulk crossing condition for the dressing phase. So now the function is only a function of one argument, and even the right hand side is simpler. So of course you can even try to with the simplest square root of this as a solution. This is a too naive solution. The point I wanted to make is that there are many ways of solving this crossing equation. I will just present the one we found, which is the unique solution we found that satisfies the following checks. I'm not going to give any detail of the derivation, but it is just a natural generalization of what, for instance, Bolin and Viera did in this review for the computation of the bulk dressing phase. And the result can be written as a contour integral of this form when this argument is larger than one, and you have to add this extra term when the argument is smaller than one for this to be a continuous function. As I said, there are many other solutions, but this is the only one that satisfies, for instance, the following check. So you can now take this dressing phase and evaluate it in the strong coupling limit in which these spectral parameters take this value. If you do that, and you consider the sigma v we just computed, this is the bulk dressing factor we added by convenience, and you compute this as strong coupling and you get this. So the term in red is the one coming for the solution we just found. Well, the thing is that you can compute what the dressing factor, the boundary dressing coefficient is as strong coupling by doing a classical computation in string theory. What you have to do is to consider the reflection of a magnon by a boundary, by this boundary, by the boundary set by this Wilson loop, compute the time delay, and you know that the time delay is related to the derivative of the dressing factor or the dressing phase we are looking for. So, and if we do this computation, you exactly reproduce the strong, you get exactly the strong coupling, or better say, our solution exactly reproduces the strong coupling computation of the boundary dressing phase. So, well, now I can argue that we have a strong candidate for the exact reflection matrix for impurities propagating in this vacuum with Wilson loop as boundaries. So let me remind you what were the enumerated steps, the missing steps of the outline. So we would like, so far I was not really talking about the existence of two boundaries, I was just focusing on the half line and fixing what the reflection matrix is, but of course you can put two boundaries, I mean you are inserting this in a finite length Wilson loop. You can obtain the asymptotic wet equations, but those are going to be valid for large L. You would like first you also would like to introduce this insertion at the cusp, at the tip of a cusp of a Wilson loop. And this corresponds to making a global rotation of the matrix, given the reflection matrix. So this is very simple. The tricky part is incorporating the finite size correction. For that, we would need to do a boundary thermodynamic wet ansatz. And once this finite size correction are under control, we can just focus in the ground state. So let's say the Casimir energy, the energy of just this state when you have a cusp. Compute that exactly, and finally take the limit of L equal to zero. In that limit, the insertion disappears, and so the anomalous dimension of this guy in this limit should give us the cusp anomalous dimension, which is what relates to the quark antiquark potential in n equal 4 super young wells. So, well, now, other questions so far? Maybe I, yes.
So what do you do?
No. Well, thermodynamic Betanzas works for incorporate finite size correction. So then you can solve it asymptotically. But then if you solve exactly the TVA equations that I will show you, this is valid for any other. In particular, there's going to be in the weak coupling, because in this case, there are not only the dependence on this parameter L, but it's also the dependence on the coupling. In particular, in the weak coupling, even the asymptotic solution is valid for any L. I will present that later. So, well, you probably, most of you know better than me about this, but let me just make a quick review and emphasize the differences between the boundary TVA with the usual TVA. So let's imagine that we put this physical strip of size L at a finite temperature, 1 over beta, and we try to compute the partition function. Right? This would amount to this trace over all the eigenstate of this Hamiltonian. Instead of doing that, you can do the usual double weak rotation and map this to a mirror theory computation. So now in the mirror theory, you have a periodic system with of size beta. But now you are not computing a trace. You are just computing the overlap of the eigenstate of this mirror Hamiltonian with this initial and final boundary states, right? So, well, these boundary states are exactly given by the analytic continuation of the reflection matrix by exponentiating this superposition of two. Essentially, what this analytic continuation of the reflection matrix is doing is giving is the probability of the boundary to emit a pair of particles with momentum, with mirror momentum minus p tilde. And the boundary state is just the exponentiation of this two particles emission. But this is not even what we want. I mean, we would like this in a simpler situation, in whether you get what you are interested in by taking the beta going to infinity limit, the zero temperature limit, in which in that limit the partition function is just, in the physical picture, is just dominated by the energy of the ground state. Remember, this is what we want. The energy of the ground state is what we want to compute, because this is going to give you, in the limit of L going to zero, the cusp anomalous dimension. So, and not only that, even also in this is a good limit to take, because also in this limit, in the mirror theory, now the system becomes of infinite size. So we can look for the eigenstate of the mirror Hamiltonian using the asymptotic Betanzas, and in this limit this is exact. So we are going to compute this overlap in this limit, which is going to give you the exponential of the energy of the ground state. This is still not that easy to do, because this boundary state was written as superpositions of particles with momentum p and minus p, and they are not in general eigenstates of the mirror Hamiltonian. So, well, they were, unless, I mean, the mirror S matrix is trivial, which is not. But this is, I mean, ignoring this issue that these are not eigenstates, taking them as if they were eigenstates, is a way of getting the leading Luschert type correction for this energy. So let us too quickly consider that. For a moment, we will consider that those creation operator create eigenstate of the mirror Hamiltonian with the mirror energy. So then the overlap becomes a very simple computation to do. You have just to consider the overlap of the two particle, four particle, and so on states of the boundary state. And this been done, this is very general, in 95 by these people, and the result is an integral for all values of the moment of logarithm of 1 plus this trace of two, these K matrices that, remember, were the analytic continuation of the reflection matrix. So now you also, if you want to take this as the leading finite size correction, you have to expand this. Typically, this is a very small number in the large N limit. So the leading correction would be this in general, and you could interpret it as the boundary, the energy of the system is going to be corrected by the interaction of these two boundaries. Imagine that you, at some point, you emit two virtual particles, they are reflected by the boundaries and then annihilated later on. But there are some cases in which this approximation, this you get just by dropping the logarithm and approximating the logarithm of by this. But there are cases in which this approximation is not correct. And the case is when this quantity here has a pole, a double pole as p goes to zero. In that case, you cannot drop the logarithm. You have to take all the terms of the logarithm into account. And this integral gives you just the square root of the residue. It's not a residue because it's double pole, of the coefficient of this the coefficient of this function at the singularity. And in this case, what this, if that was the interpretation for the Luchter correction when there is no singularity, in this case, what you have is that now because of this pole, it's like having a single pole in each of the reflection or analytic continuation of reflection matrices. This corresponds that this pole represents that the possibility of one of the boundaries emitting a particle that is going to be later on absorbed by the other boundary. So when there is this pole, this is the leading correction. And it turns out that when the boundary reflection matrix we found for the case of the Wilson loop is going to have such pole, such double pole, and this is going to be crucial for our computation to reproduce the correct. Yes?
Excuse me, probably a silly question. How do you choose the sign in this case?
Well, let me go to that case later when I focus in the Wilson loop case. Yes, in the general case, I'm not so sure what the answer is. But in our case, there is a limit in which we know what the sign of the contribution we want it to be, and we just take this sign. Okay. So, very briefly, so I'm not going to present the derivation. I'm going to just sketch similarities as differences of our TVA derivation with the periodic TVA. So, well, as you may notice, the system, the mirror system, is exactly the same mirror model as in the case of periodic boundary conditions. The difference is that now we are not computing the trace in the mirror system, but this overlap of the eigenstate of the mirror Hamiltonian with these boundary states. So if the mirror system is the same, so the eigenstates are the same, so we have the same mirror particles and the same wave functions, which are nothing but the densities of particles over the densities of holes. But there are some differences which come for imposing, for computing this overlap. In particular, we are overlapping with this boundary state which has pairs of particles. So, for instance, for the densities corresponding to the momentum carrying particles, we only need to consider the half line, so only P positive, because P negative corresponds to the same state. So that's one thing. Another thing is that the boundary state is a singlet under this diagonal symmetry. So whenever there is a root of type U1, there is one with minus U7 and so on. So there is this folding symmetry condition on the wave functions. So if you consider a typical T-hook for the wave functions, you only have half of it. And you can have the other half, but it is related to this, by this folding symmetry. So we also have to include the cusp angles, but as I said, this is just a global rotation of the reflection matrices, which enter very simply, enter just, they act diagonally on different levels of the nested Betti ansatz. So in the TVA equation, they will just enter as chemical potentials. And also the boundary dressing factor is, you can consider it as a chemical potential which is U dependent for the momentum carrying wave function. So as I said, I'm not going to present the derivation. The derivation is exactly the same. And the TVA equations look very much as in the periodic case with some differences. So we have these cusp angles as chemical potentials. So you may say this is similar to the periodic, to the case with period, with twisted boundary conditions. This was done considering in these articles. That's true, but we also have this twisted boundary condition, and we have this sigma v, this dressing phase here, which is not in the twisted case, so which is crucial for us. So it's similar, but it's not the same. So let me just present, the asymptotic solution for this TVA equation. The asymptotic solution is when this carrying momentum carrying y's are very small, so we can just drop them and find a solution for this system. And this is gonna give you what is the Luschner or leading corrections. So you see the first four TVA equations fully decoupled from the yi zero, so we can solve it just by this, with these trigonometric functions, exactly. And then you plug all these functions in the TVA for the yi zero, and you find what is the yi zero asymptotic solution, which is the one that you had to feed in the equation that gives you the energy. Right, here we already see that since we knew what the cusp anomaly dimension was a weak coupling, this coming with a square of this difference was a hint for us that our dressing phase needed to have this pole, so that the final answer is going to be given by like the square root of this, right? So that was, when we were looking for the dressing phase, we always knew that our dressing phase needed this double pole, or single pole, sorry, in order for this computation to be dominated by the square root of this coefficient in the asymptotic solution. So, well, now we have just to compute this for this. So we need to compute what this GA is for this asymptotic solution. So, well, let me skip. So we can do it as strong coupling, but this is not as interesting because this corresponds to the energy of the difference between the energy and the momentum of a classical string. So in the strong coupling, we need L to be large for the asymptotic solution to be valid. But so this is not related to the cusp anomaly dimension, but it's a check that our result is correct. So the most interesting check maybe is this weak coupling check. So for this asymptotic solution to be valid, this asymptotic this approximation to be valid, we need this quantity to be very small. Now, if you compute this using the expression for the mirror dispersion relationship, in the weak coupling limit, you get this. And now, this is going to be, in the weak coupling limit, it's always going to be in a small quantity for any L. Now, you don't need L to be large for this to be small. So that's why, even in this weak coupling limit, this asymptotic solution is going to be valid for any value of L. We don't need L to be large. So, well then, if we compute what the dressing phase we found is for small g and in the limit of p going to zero, we get that where a is just this integer labeling all the possible bound states. So we collect all, we put this with with this other, well, the this other cost, this trigonometric combination, and also this bit, this bit in the weak coupling limit, and then the energy is going to be given by this infinite sum. And here is the issue with the sign you were asking. So in principle, you have to decide if when you take the square root, you put it with a plus or minus. And what we did is we take it for even and odd A numbers differently, like this. And the way we choose this sign is that in the case when phi goes to pi, we would like this quantity to be negative, and for that you need to alternate the sign like this. So this choice was crucial to getting the correct weak coupling answer. But with this choice, so this is not a physical argument. Well, it is, but I don't know how strong it is for you. So if you do that, you can resum this, and you get this Bernoulli polynomial. Remember that this is the energy or the Kaspar anomalous dimension of a Wilson loop in which you inserted Z to the L at the cusp, right? So if there were no cusp, this is the BPS, or even if the cusp angles were equal, this is BPS. But if you, in general, it is not BPS and this is the anomalous dimension. So it's not the anomalous dimension of a Wilson loop with a cusp. It could be that if we take the limit of L going to zero. And the nice thing is when you do that, what you get is precisely what it was computed for the one loop, for the one loop result for the cusp anomalous dimension for these two internal and geometrical cusp angles. Of course, if you wanted to higher loop orders, you had to iterate TBI equation and not just to consider this asymptotic solution. So, in our article, we sort of consider some iteration, but only in this small angle limit. In this limit, the TBI equation simplify, but I guess that Gromov is going to be talking about this tomorrow. So we just iterated three times, and we found like the expression for the cusp anomalous dimension in the small angle limit to three loop. The interesting thing is in this limit, you can do a computation using localization results, which are totally independent of integrability, and you know the exact answer. And you expand the exact answer, it coincides with the iterations of TBA we have done. So, but the most interesting thing is that now the complete all loop answer is known using a simplified TBA, I guess. We are going to hear about this tomorrow. So, let me just conclude. So, what we found was a set of TBA equations to compute the cusp anomalous dimensions for any value of the angles, the cusp, the geometrical and internal cusp angle, and for any value of the top coupling, which is what it is, the quark anti-quark potential, or the generalized quark anti-quark potential in the three sphere in the planar limit. We check that for arbitrary cusp angles, this gives the correct leading weak coupling computation. In the strong coupling limit, we checked it against a string with large angular momentum with arbitrary cusp angles, so it is also a check of strong coupling. And, well, we did this three-loop check in the small angle limit, but now in the small angle limit, you can check it to all orders. Well, just a few things that just two things you could try to do. Well, as I said, this small angle limit is interesting because so the TBA simplifies and you reproduce in this limit the all loop function for the cusp anomalous dimension. But it could be also interesting to consider, I don't know, to see how the VES equation, which we should recover when we take this phi to be imaginary and very large. In this limit, our cusp And number, as I mentioned, should reproduce our TVA equation should reproduce the BES equation. That would be nice to see. The quark anti-quark potential in flat space, you recover it by taking phi equal going to pi. There is also a limit in which, among all the contributions to the Casper number of dimensions, only ladders contribute, dominate. And this is when you take this theta angle to be imaginary and very large and keeping this combination fixed. And in that case, the ladder solution can be, it's known. So it would be nice to see if from our TVA we can reproduce the ladder computation. And other things to consider is, well, we could try to solve them numerically. This is very speculative, but since in the small angle limit there was this computation you could do to compute something to all orders, one relying on integrability and one relying on localization. If you could do the same or something in the ABJM case, maybe you can use that to fix the unknown function in the dispersion relation of ABJM. Any computation you do using integrability is going to depend on this unknown function in the case of ABJM. So if you could do a computation by an exact computation using integrability and an exact computation using something else, localization, you can use this as a tool to fix what this function is. So that's it. Thank you for your attention.
So, any questions?
How much optimistic are you about ABJM because the symmetry group is smaller?
Yes, I didn't think hard about it, but that's true. So, in this case, the vacuum symmetry was two copies of SU2, and once you put the boundary, you reduce only to a diagonal copy. In the case of ABJM, already the vacuum symmetry is smaller, it's a single SU2 slash 2, so when you impose the boundary conditions, so maybe the symmetries you have to fix, the reflection matrix are not enough to fix it fully. So that I don't know. But it could be, so there are some other cases in which you have less symmetry, like SU1 slash 2. There was a case of boundary conditions set by giant gravitons in which this symmetry was enough to fix what the reflection matrix is. I'm not saying that this is the case. I haven't thought carefully of the problem. And then you also need, there are a lot of localization results that were known in the case of n equal 4 that are not known in the case of ABJM yet. So there are like gaps in the both approaches to fill.
I have a question about the boundary contribution to the ground state energy you calculated. You discussed the model and mirror model and then overlap of the leading eigenstate and the boundary states, and in the end you had got a rather simple expression, I mean modified TBA-like equations. So do I understand it correctly that this is only valid for zero temperature and arbitrary system size? So then actually everything boils down to an eigenvalue calculation. But you started with something like finite circumference of the cylinder and a rather large extension in L direction into the chain direction. Well, maybe the question is a little bit confusing. So the question is actually, what is the relation of the extensions of the two directions of your geometry, and where is the boundary?
So what you'd be interested in is to know if you want the spectrum of this original physical Hamiltonian, and if this system is defined in a system of size L, all the eigenvalues, the spectrum is going to depend on this L, right? This is the thing you want to keep finite. So if you put it at temperature 1 over beta and you compute the trace, well, you would need to know all the eigenvalues of this open system. But this is not what I was interested here today. I just wanted the energy of the ground state. So now if you take this temperature to zero, so among all this trace, I mean all the sum of all the eigenvalues of the physical system, the the ground state energy is going to be dominating, and so the beta going to infinity limit is just to reduce this, the partition function to the energy of the ground state of the system, which is going to be a function of L, which is kept finite. So I'm not taking. Later, you can assume that L is large but finite, but in principle, I would like to know the answer for any value of L.
Okay, so then I'm rather happy about the result. So beta goes to infinity, L is finite, and then you get these modified TBA-like equations, but the system size L enters there.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So I would like to ask a question. So coming back to this sign, can you...
The sign, yes.
Yeah, how you choose the sign. When you have this integral in the Lüscher correction, and you have the integral of log 1 plus...
Yes, maybe that was here.
Yeah, like this. So I think you don't have freedom to choose this sign, because if you take the first integral with the log, and you plug back the singular part, and then you can evaluate this integral explicitly.
Sorry?
And then you got an expression when you have to take a sign with, I mean, the square root with the plus sign.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that you have the freedom to choose a sign, so there is a correct choice. The thing is that if I consider this computation in a limit in which we know what the sign of this finite size correction should be, this is indicating that, I mean, this sign should be taken as we did. But I don't know from here, maybe you know better than me, so how can you, if it is obvious for any value of the angles, how it is that you have to take this alternating sign, but... In general, I don't know. I mean, if you know that in some setup you know that this the correction of this finite, I mean the value of this energy should have particular sign, so you can use that to be certain that the sign choice is the correct.
So my point is that if you are given one TBA, this gives one sign, and you have no freedom. In order to get this different sign in a completely different physical situation, then you have a different TBA, which gives a different sign. So once you have a TBA, the sign is completely fixed.
Okay, you are saying that you make some modification here in order that
to get a different sign.
Sign choice.
Yeah.
Okay.